love you.
I know.
And welcome to Hollywood Blockbusters. I'm your host, Joe Hollywood. And once again, I am joined by Imaginos Pete.
Hey, hey.
And Andrew, never let go, Walker.
Never let go. It's Valentine's Day.
You know, when you say
and Ash Wednesday, baby.
You know, when they say never let go, I keep thinking of Titanic. And what's the first thing she did?
Let go. that's a woman.
I'll need to add that to my list of movies to watch.
You are on. I had a box of chocolates for you, but you're not going to get it.
I have seen Forrest Gump one time.
Well, you know what? Double points. He knew which line that was from.
There you go.
Yes.
Which movie that's from, and he got the movie, and he had seen it.
Hey, it's Zemeckis, so, you know,
there you go.
Got to see him.
As Andrew said, we are recording this on Valentine's Day, so we are going to do an episode dedicated to our favorite romantic movies, rom-coms. You know, the interesting thing is I was putting my list together and going down lists of romantic movies, looking to see what I might be missing. I realize as I'm going down these titles that this genre, rom-com/romantic movies, has given us some of the greatest movie moments, greatest movie lines of all time. Let's see, how about this one?
Oh, we got...
Emma, just had...
Shut up. Just shut up. You had me at hello.
Oh.
Wait. Andrew?
Can you name that movie?
You are unbelievable.
Help him out, Nick.
What year did it come out?
Late 90s?
Late 90s.
Or was it? Yeah.
It has Tom Cruise, Cuba Gooding Jr., and Renee Zellweger.
Jerry Maguire.
There we go.
Nice.
I haven't seen it, but I know those people were in it.
There's hope for you yet.
Here's another one, not necessarily on my favorite romantic movies list, but I think this is one of my favorite movie lines of all time.
You make me want to be a better man.
That's maybe the best compliment of my life.
Name that movie.
Name that movie.
I know that was Jack, right?
That was Jack.
And Helen Hunt. Because it has one of the best lines. That line is in there, but it's as good as it gets.
Okay, I was going to say as good as it gets.
And it has one of the classic lines in there. An old friend of mine, Rob, also pointed this out. How do you write women so well? I think of a man. Then it removed reason and accountability. And I was like, well, it could get me in trouble, but I mean...
And, of course, here's one of the greatest lines of all time from one of my favorite rom-coms.
I'll have what she's having.
That's all, yeah.
I've seen it one time. When Harry Met Sally.
Two out of three.
Billy and Meg.
It's a special day here on Hollywood Blockbusters.
He's blowing Ted Williams' batting average out of the water.
That's right. That's good enough for the majors. All right, so what we're going to do, I have a list of, so I've challenged these guys to create their list of 100 favorite movies. I've had my list of 100 favorite movies for 20 years or so. That's where I started. I looked at my list of 100 favorite movies. I picked five romantic/rom-com titles off of my 100 greatest movie list. I got a couple of honorable mentions that just didn't quite make the list. And then I have a list of some movies that are considered classics, the old black and white movies from the golden age of Hollywood. And so I have that list. We're going to go around the table. I'll have you guys contribute your favorites. And this is how we're celebrating Valentine's Day tonight. Number one on my list, as far as modern era movies go, I'm going to play a little clip here.
As you wish.
Since the invention of the kiss, there have been five kisses that were rated the most passionate, the most pure. This one left them all behind.
Got to go with The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
A Rob Reiner directed film starring Cary Elwes, Robin Wright. Listen to this cast. Mandy Patinkin, Wallace Shawn. Inconceivable! Chris Sarandon, Christopher Guest, Andre the Giant. Peter Falk is basically reading the story to his grandson, Fred Savage. So much going for
Grandpa,
this movie.
His grandson.
His, what did I say?
I think it's his son.
Yeah, his grandson, Fred Savage. So much going on in this movie. Fantasy, adventure. But the whole thing, the glue that holds us together is the romance between the Dread Pirate Roberts and Princess Buttercup.
Joe, can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Can you name the comedic power couple, even though they weren't a couple in real life, that showed up?
Have luck storming the castle, that one. Billy Crystal and Carol Kane.
Yes. Oh, my God, look at you. You cannot stop this man.
I'm not a witch. I'm your wife. That is such a great cameo. Just awesome. Yeah, this is one of my all-time favorite movies. Probably top 15, top 20. Great performances, great characters.
What was Mandy Patinkin's character's name?
Nico Montoya.
Of course it is. This is silly. I shouldn't be asking these questions. I almost feel like I'm insulting you.
Don't question me. So this movie came out in 1987 and still holds up today.
Oh, absolutely.
Just fantastic. So
I could easily, yeah, that could crack a top 100 and top, and then you pick the genre, like romance movie. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So many great moments, so many great lines. Gosh, I could go on and on and on. I wish I had more lines loaded up here that I can play, but definitely and this one I think does fall in the category of rom-com because there's a lot
yeah,
of
absolutely.
Comedic moments, but the romance is there, you know, As You Wish, all that stuff. So, Nick, what's your thoughts on The Princess Bride?
I love it. I mean, that I've just been saying that's a movie. When I first saw it, initially I was like, whoa, what's going on here? But it stands there. Several classic lines, great performances. I still can't pronounce Carrie L's last name properly.
It's Elwes.
Elwes?
I think so.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I think so.
See?
Yeah,
Elwes.
Yeah.
To this day. No, it's fantastic because when I first saw that movie, the idea that it's a grandfather spending time with his grandson, and he's like, oh, I don't want to hear this story. And then he gets invested in it, just like the audience. No, you can read a little bit more. I can stop if you want. Did Columbo just come to visit his grandson? Because it was like he was just going with Columbo. I was like, all right, Peter Falk, on you go. Maybe he was on set and he just didn't have time to. He's like, yeah, I'll do a movie in between.
Yeah, that was one of his last great roles, after a career of Columbo and a lot of character roles before that, to kind of that bookend of The Princess Bride, him narrating the story was just a great cap on a great career. Andrew, Princess Bride?
Yes. I'm not as familiar with it. I've seen it one time.
Wow.
It counts.
Probably 16, 17 years ago. So yeah. I remember, the big plot points. But
no, that's fine.
I loved it. It was extremely funny.
Yeah.
I love, the set pieces, just the absurdity of it. Andre the Giant. Was it Robin Wright?
Yeah.
Robin Wright was Princess Buttercup. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was stunning and just great.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot to say about it, but I just know that it's one of those movies that's universally loved. I've never heard a single person say, well, that movie's overrated or it's corny. It's was that Rob Reiner?
Rob Reiner directed.
Okay,
yeah,
that's what I thought, and he's a great director.
Now,
in my opinion,
you're probably hanging around a lot more open minded people because for me, for people who have not seen it yet, they'll say, "Oh yeah, that seems really hyped." Okay, fine, and then they watch it.
And then
they are us.
Yeah,
and then they join us.
Yes, absolutely.
One of us.
Yeah. If I was a parent and I wanted to introduce my favorite movies to my children growing up, as early as possible, I would show them The Princess Bride because that would be a great, great movie to show little ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So that's number one on my list. Do you want to go around the table and, Nick, give us what would you say is your all-time favorite rom-com romantic film for Valentine's Day?
My all-time favorite romance movie, and I'm glad we had this conversation before because initially I was just thinking rom-com, and I was like, no, wait, it's romance movies. So then it expanded my thing. So if it's romance movies, then I go Casablanca. It's not a shameless, easy answer. It's one of those movies where I genuinely enjoy that one. When it comes to romantic comedies, I have one that's kind of out in left field.
Hold on, before you go any further.
Yeah.
Ilsa, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that. No. Is looking at you, kid.
Goosebumps, man. You can't mention Casablanca and then move on.
No.
We got to discuss Casablanca. Number one on my list of classic
movies. Oh, there we go. And what I appreciate, Joe's 8K is threading a fine line of turning this into from a clip show, because otherwise I would just listen to every clip that he's loaded up.
I only have a handful of them, but yeah, there's some key lines I wanted to play.
It's one of the top scripts ever written.
I agree. You know what's interesting? You know, I've done a lot of reading on this, and for the movie studio that produced Casablanca, Warner Brothers, they kind of wrote this off as a B-movie, low-budget flick, and had no idea what was this team of Michael Curtiz. He was the director, right?
Yep.
Bogart, Bergman. Had no idea what this movie was going to become. It won Best Picture, Best Director at the Oscars.
And there's a controversy where Warner runs up and snatches it.
This is a movie, every time I watch it, I enjoy it more. If you look at the American Film Institute's greatest lines of all time, there's like three or four lines from this movie that are on the list of greatest of all time. Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine. Like, there's some really great writing on this. It's really amazing.
Sam has memorable lines. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, is that the movie where he tells the piano player to play a song or something?
Yeah, so not Humphrey. Humphrey Bogart basically told Sam, never play that song again because it brought up tough memories. Ingrid Bergman walks into Rick's cafe, she tells Sam, play the song. And he's like, oh, I don't know if I should.
Okay.
She's like, play the song, Sam.
I'll hum it for you.
So when he starts playing, Humphrey Bogart comes out like, I told you never to play that song. And then he sees.
I remember coming across that summer. Another movie I have not seen, unfortunately.
It's okay. I'll just,
No,
can you take back an Oscar?
I think I want to name him Sidney Applebaum. I don't know. It's a fitting name. Anyway.
What I would say is, because every character got their moment, from Ugadi to Ferrari to who's, you know, the rival shop owner, Ugadi, who took the letters of transit, you know. Even Sasha is like, Sasha, you know, take Yvonne home. Yes, boss. And come right back. Yes, boss. It's like, Sasha, give me another drink. Yvonne, I love you, but he pays me.
Yeah. Rick, you despise me, don't you? If I ever gave you any thought, I might. Those are so many great lines.
He's like, oh, I'm shocked to find this gambling money. You're winning, sir. Oh, thank you very much. How are we doing? A couple of thousand less than I expected when he helps the couple out. No, there was no shortage of classic lines. Every character gets a moment to shine. Even the villain, Major Strasser, gets a moment to shine. Yeah, it's up there. I love it. And my romantic comedy idea is One Fine Day.
Tell me about that one. I am not familiar with that
one. It's Michelle Pfeiffer and George Clooney.
Okay.
Back in the day. It's, I want to say, 1995, 1996, around that time. And so he's still coming off his ER popularity. And this is before he dons the bat suit, unfortunately. Okay. And I was at that age. I was a teenager. I was watching that movie. And I went, you know what, George? You got some suave to you. I like that. I'm going to try and see if I can incorporate that. I'm going to be like a filthy chameleon.
Give me the premise in a nutshell.
So it's two single parents, and basically they're trying, each one's a reporter working on a high-stakes story, and he's on the verge of getting fired because his source, even though because he challenges authority, and he goes after the big targets, so if you go after the big people, you better be able to back it up. But he still gets it done. And Michelle Pfeiffer is a divorcee who is trying her best to balance her life, and she's up for a position at this ad firm. And so it's, can she, and her son is just a troublemaker. And George Clooney's daughter is, you know, equally a troublemaker, but in her own right. And then they're both their kids go to the same school, and they were supposed to take their kids to this field trip on a ferry, Long Island ferry. They miss it, so now they're stuck with their kids for the day, and they have to be each balance. Can you look after my kid in the afternoon, and I'll look after your kid later? And so it's how do they handle each other looking after their kids? George Clooney's like, let kids be kids. She's like, no, I have to keep a very structured order. So two very different people. It's a very, if you get a chance to check it out, I would. It'll never make it in the top 100 of rom-coms out there, but it's just a movie. When I saw it at the time, I go, but if I have to go classic rom-coms, and there's Groundhog Day, Edward Scissorhands, you know, I'd even put a 40-Year-Old Virgin up there.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw that on a list that I was looking at, and I was like, I don't know if I would consider 40-Year-Old Virgin a rom-com, but I don't know. Andrew, what's at the top of your list?
I had a hard time coming up with a number one, but a movie that has resonated with me for over 20 years now. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, but Lost in Translation.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, definitely.
So,
yeah.
So I bought it on DVD when it first came out. I haven't watched it, I'm guessing, probably 6 or 7 years. But two nights ago, I watched it.
Yeah.
And it just brought back great memories. So I saw that movie my freshman year of college. My first year as a college, I went to Albion, the private school. And right when I got there and I started making friends, there was a girl that went with a group of us. And we kind of liked each other. We were just starting to get to know each other, and we watched that movie together. We kind of bonded over it. About 6 months later, we started dating. And we saw it in the old historic theater in downtown Albion, which I'm sure is closed by now. But, you know, an old 1920s beautiful theater. But there's something about that movie. It's not your conventional.
Oh, not at all.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, what's interesting about that movie
at all.
You call it a rom-com, yet the movie is, they are not a romantic couple. It's a platonic relationship.
Yeah.
But they have this bond, this attraction. But I love the fact that it doesn't go that conventional romantic movie route.
They're both in a foreign city. Scarlett Johansson's there, but she is married with her husband, played by Giovanni Ribisi, and she's already feels disconnected from him, even though they've only been married a couple years. Bill Murray, he's a fading movie star, just going out there to record a
commercial,
whiskey
liquor commercial,
And you can tell his marriage isn't, you know, he's just kind of phoning it in with his marriage, and he kind of explains that to Scarlett after a while. And they're just looking for some sort of human connection in this absurd, almost caricature of Tokyo. They see all the neon lights. They walk through arcades, and they're doing funny karaoke. But you could tell they're both having fun for the first time in a long time.
Yeah,
just enjoying each other's company.
Yeah,
and there's no. There might be a tiny bit of sexual tension there, but it's not consummated.
And it would have creeped me out, I think, they would have shown them in bed.
Scarlett Johansson, when that movie was filmed, she was 17.
Yeah.
Bill Murray was like 52. So,
yeah, right.
So, but looking in the grand scheme of things, like, yeah, that would have been creepy if it would have been.
Well, have they crossed
going down have they crossed that road? Yeah.
But I think as a story, it made you wonder. You wonder if Bill Murray's character wondered if I had been younger, 30 years ago, at a different time.
That was going through his head.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if only we had met at different time. I mean, the movie spoke to me because I've had numerous relationships like that as like a mentor to young woman who wants to break into news or something. And there's that mentor mentee relationship, but it's not romantic, but you, you get something from each other. There's a bond, and then you go your separate ways, never to see each other again. Yeah. And I know I've had numerous experiences like that where you leave a piece of yourself with each other, but you go on with your lives. It's that movie really did speak to me.
Yep. Yeah. And I love the cinematography.
Yeah.
The soundtrack was great. And that was Sofia Coppola's. It was only her second movie after Virgin Suicides. And right. I'm like, that's an excellent film for being your second
movie.
And it's pretty autobiographical from what I read. Like, she pretty much went through that.
Yeah.
She was married to Spike Jonze at the time.
Oh, the director, yeah.
So that's who the Giovanni Ribisi character is based on. I don't know who the Bill Murray character is based on. It might not be based on anyone. It might be based on somebody that she hasn't talked about. It might be based on a composite of older men.
It could be a composite of all her father's friends. the filmmakers that she's hanging around.
Scorsese.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah, that she admires.
You take a little bit of all of them and put them all together. It's like that was the mentor.
That movie was a huge financial success. It had a budget of $4 million.
Yeah.
It made just under $120
million. Nice.
Think about that.
That's a huge return on investment. Yeah.
And after that, I don't know if she won, but she was nominated for Best Original Screenplay. And she was also nominated for Best Director, only the third female nominated for Best Director at that time.
Wow. So that's awesome.
That's pretty big for how young she was.
I have a little footnote on that. I was in L.A. in 2005 with a buddy of mine, and he said, hey, I'm working on a documentary, and while we're out here, there's a guy I want to interview who lives on Hollywood Boulevard in a high-rise. He's like, you mind if we swing by and shoot an interview for my documentary? I said, no, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So he set it up. He brought his gear. We find this high-rise on Hollywood Boulevard. It was just west of Grauman's Chinese Theater and everything. We go up to this high rise. This guy had this panoramic view of Hollywood Boulevard and everything, and we spent a good chunk of the evening not only interviewing him, but just having him share stories with us. And I said, hey, you got any famous neighbors? And he goes, yeah, there's a girl that lives upstairs from me, and he couldn't think of her name, and I'm like, who is it? Who is it? And he goes, she was in that movie, Lost in Translation.
Oh,
I'm like,
gosh.
Are you telling me that you share this building with Scarlett Johansson? That's her. That's her name. Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine bumping into her in an elevator?
In 2005, she was on the cusp of being the it girl.
Exactly.
My gosh.
Yeah, and think about her career since then. Marvel movies and everything.
Everything.
I would just like that gentleman to be like, oh, you mean JoJo.
ScarJo.
Is that her name? I keep calling her JoJo. I don't even remember her name.
That's right. So pretty cool. I was telling my buddy we should just hang out in the lobby and see if she comes in or out. But
And hang in the lobby, and you probably see a couple other people you'd recognize.
Well, coincidentally, as we left the high rise that evening, we were passing Grauman's Chinese Theater and got invited to Sandra Bullock's movie premiere, Miss Congeniality 2. So it was a pretty interesting night. That
nice.
And there's
cool.
another actress who's had a good run when it comes to
the rom-coms.
The romantic movies and While You Were Sleeping.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's one of them. The Proposal that came out with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good that they all fought to – anyone that gets put into that like typecast, oh, you're a rom-com or a romance person, they try to fight out of it. You know, she did Gravity, and then she did
Speed.
Blindside Speed.
Well,
know, so,
Speed was before she got typecast, but still.
It's what happened with Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they were like, oh, you know, she's the rom-com girl. Or what's her name? Catherine Heigl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking before the podcast, you know, there's certain faces that, you know, are the poster children for – rom-coms, and the name that immediately comes to mind for me is Tom Hanks.
Yep.
You know, he basically kicked off his career with Splash and followed that up with You've Got Mail and Sleepless in Seattle, both with Meg
is
Ryan.
Is Big considered romantic comedy?
We're gonna open up a can of worms here.
Is the worm?
Talk about consummating a relationship and feeling creepy about it. This kid who was in the body of a man had conjugal visits with, I forget the actress's name, Elizabeth Perkins, I think it was her name.
Oh.
And I found that very off-putting that I mean, not that she knew. In her mind, yeah. He was a grown man, but in his mind, he's a young kid getting it on.
Like,
so
how would that play today?
Yeah, well, no, it wouldn't.
I thought it was more off-putting that when she realized he was a kid, she was like, "Do you have to go back?" I went, "Lady, lady,
I could teach you.
Come
so
on."
Much. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I don't know if I would add that. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think I would put it in the rom-com category because it. That's a weird asterisk.
It is a weird asterisk. Yeah. No, Tom Hanks, yeah, you know, romantic comedy guy, and then all of a sudden he has to break out into other roles.
Yeah, so he
Saving Private Ryan.
Pigeonholed, you know, with these romantic comedy roles, yeah, and then he wins back-to-back Oscars, and yeah, so, you know, whenever an actor complains, "Oh, I'm always stereotyped," I'm like, yeah, really? Look at Tom Hanks. Look at Apollo Harrison 13. Ford. These guys don't complain.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Evolving beyond the slapstick comedies into meaningful roles. Yeah.
Man on the Moon. It's Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, I was
going to
say Eternal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Truman Show.
Yeah. The Majestic.
I love The Truman Show.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Andrew, you were just talking about Bill Murray. I'm going to talk about my second favorite rom-com on my list. Came out in 1993, and I have a little clip here.
I don't know what to say.
I do. No matter what happens tomorrow or for the rest of my life, I'm happy now because I love you.
I think I'm happy too.
What's interesting about Groundhog Day, which I just watched recently on Groundhog Day, it came out in 1993. Bill Murray, Andy McDowell, Chris Elliott, directed by Harold Ramis, one of the funniest minds in the history of comedy.
Had a wonderful cameo in there, too.
Yeah. What's interesting about Groundhog Day is when you sit down and you start watching this, it is not a romantic movie. It's a flat-out comedy of this guy trapped in this loop. Then it gets really dark as he tries to escape this loop and finds that he can't. And then somewhere along the way, this movie morphs into this romantic comedy, and it ends up being very sweet. Like, it could have gone very, very dark. As a matter of fact, I was reading something recently where where someone said, "I'm surprised they showed some restraint and didn't go full Purge." Like, he could have done anything he wanted and not faced the consequences. And a lot of people might have gone very, very dark with this opportunity of not facing
consequences.
But that's
where I think Harold Ramis shows the type of dark, you know, the type of movie you're trying to make. It's not shock value. You could have done it. You could have done gore.
Yeah.
I mean, he did commit. He stole. He committed a felony.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant how he did it. It's like, car? So you know how many times he's tried it.
Yeah. Did I bring out two bags or one? Yeah, and so it as it goes along the way, at first he's kind of a perv. Like, he's, you know, it might be considered sexual harassment today, but some of the stuff that he says to Andy McDowell's character is kind of cringeworthy. Like, she's like, "Let me know if there's anything I can help you with." And he says, "Can you help me with my pelvic tilt?" Which a lot of people might not know what that means, but I'm like, he's sexually harassing her.
But he's a jerk. That's the
exactly.
whole thing.
Exactly.
That's his character. He's an outright jerk.
He's playing himself in real life.
I mean, Nancy the hairdresser.
Nancy Taylor? Yeah. So he starts out as this chauvinistic pig. And you realize that the purpose of the time loop was for him to grow and evolve as a person until he nails it. And then he has that one perfect day where he saves someone from choking, catches a kid falling out of the tree.
Changes the tire.
And it's interesting. There's a moment where Andy McDowell's character says, "Do you want to get together for lunch?" And he goes, "I'll take a rain check." And she seems surprised by that. Like, he just turned me down because he had stuff to do. And that's when things started turning, and that's when she started thinking, okay, this guy is a little different.
What I love about the movie, it makes you ask the question, how long would it take to cure you from being an asshole?
Yeah.
And they ran the numbers for all the skills that he had, and someone actually spent the time to do it, and they came up roughly with the time, 33-plus years.
Yeah.
He was in that.
I've heard everything from 10 years to 10,000 years. If you count the scenes in the movie where things repeat, I think there's like 38 or 40 instances where you're like, okay, that's a day, that's a day. But then he says things in the movie, like when he dresses up as Clint Eastwood to go to the movie theater with the girl dressed as the maid, and he goes, "I've seen this movie 100 times." Well, is that in the loop, or was that before the loop? Like, has he sat in the theater 100 times watching the same movie?
And in the dark sequence where he keeps offing himself, he tells McDowell's character, "I've been shot, stabbed." He goes through the Rasputin list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's no one can put an exact number on. I mean, how long does it take to master the piano, to master ice carving? Yeah, so it could have been an eternity.
You know what always gets me, that movie? It to this day, it'll always get me. The old man, when he sees him in the homeless old man.
Yeah, that was a turning point, too, when he realized he thought he can save everybody and realized he can't save this old man.
But the way that old man's performance, it's something about it. It always gets me. It always gets me. Like, I always, maybe because I've become a jaded person, I don't tear up as much anymore, but that always hits me in the heart. I always hear that when he says, "Come on, old man." He's like, oh, and the guy's like, oh.
Yeah, yeah, and he still does despite the care. Now, here's something interesting is there was a version of the script pretty late in development that explained the loop.
Oh.
And the story goes that he had jilted some woman that he treated poorly, and she placed a curse on him. And so the loop is the result of the curse. And then they wisely, I think, said, let's not explain the loop.
I'm glad they just left it out. Yeah. It actually is. It just says, you know, maybe they almost hint at that there's a higher power, the bartender.
Yeah, the bartender almost seems aware of what's going on, but
they always hint at that. So it's almost like someone's observing, like, okay, I think you've learned your lesson. I think you've finally grown.
Yeah, and that was the whole point. And then, you know, they also said that they had proposed starting the movie with him already in the loop, and then somebody wisely said, no, let's have him experience that deja vu at first, which I thought was brilliant. Now, the sad thing about this whole movie, which kind of breaks my heart, is that movie led to the breakup of the friendship between Bill Murray and Harold Ramis.
Yes. Oh.
They had starred in numerous movies together and worked on each other's projects.
Ghostbusters, right?
Ghostbusters, just a wide variety of stuff that Harold Ramis was either he had written or starred in, like Stripes and stuff like that. They had different approaches to this film. Bill Murray wanted it to be more of a philosophical thing, like a little bit more serious and, you know, talking about philosophical things, where Harold Ramis said, no, I want this to be, you know, a little bit lighter, a little bit more fun. And Harold Ramis said, like, his phone would ring in the middle of the night with Bill Murray going, okay, what are we doing here? And he's like, I'm trying to sleep. And so when they wrapped production on this, they didn't speak again for years. And it wasn't until Harold Ramis was on his deathbed that Bill Murray reached out to him, which is very, very unfortunate that it took that long. And the fact that this brilliant, brilliant movie, one of my all-time favorites, led to the fracture of their friendship breaks my heart.
Just a quick note. What are you guys' opinions on actors trying to override the writers, directors, in their vision? Because to me, that's kind of disrespectful.
I'm not a fan of it.
The writer, director, they're ultimately the boss.
Yeah.
They hired you as an actor to be on. And yeah, you can talk about stuff, but if you're demanding, no, I want to go in this direction.
Yeah.
If I was a director and an actor did that to me, I would politely say, you know, this is how it's going to be. You know, this is my story. I'm directing. I appreciate you talking, but, you know, you have to respect.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, obviously, you cast actors in roles because they bring something to it. And, you know, if you cast a Robin Williams in your movie, there is no script. You're like, Robin lets loose. All right. Action.
Yep.
And he does his thing.
Improvises everything.
So if there is an understanding and you have the green light, one thing. But if you're, you know, if the director says this is the tone we're going for and the actor says, I don't agree.
I think it's a fine line. I enjoy collaboration because you want to get the actor's feedback. But there's a fine line between like Peter Jackson, when they were doing Lord of the Rings, he said, I invited I wanted the characters to have the actors to have ownership of the characters.
Yeah.
So give us some lines, give us some suggestions. Some make it, some don't.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's, in the case of Back to the Future.
Oh, you're reading my mind. I was just going to say that.
Right, where I forgot the act.
What's his name?
Eric.
Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz. Eric Stoltz. Yeah, who got replaced. Yeah.
But because he kept coming in, he kept trying to make it a serious movie. Like, I can't believe I'm back in time. They're like, dude, it's a comedy.
Yeah, light.
Yeah,
up.
And he got canned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they
this
brought
is
in
not the tone they were going for.
So yeah. in those aspects, I agree with Andrew. You lay down the law, like, dude, yeah. you're an actor.
Yes.
You have talent. We want you to see if you can act your way into this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think after seeing the movie, Bill Murray should have approached Harold Ramis and said, all right, you were spot on. I screwed up. Because it turned out to be a brilliant, brilliant movie.
And this is my personal opinion, obviously, but Bill Murray and Chevy Chase are cut from the same cloth in certain extents because they're both, they have,
yes.
they echo the same things where they'll never admit they're wrong
yeah.
until it's too late.
But they're great comedic talents yep. who have flawed
their performances will show because they were yeah. like, look, the director was right. So yeah. like Bill Murray looking back on Groundhog Day, the audience, everyone says, yeah, that's a great movie.
Yeah.
But that's not the movie you wanted to do, Bill. Let's be serious about it. We pulled behind the curtain. You wanted to do this deep philosophical movie, but yeah. Harold was right.
Yeah.
End of story, period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my all-time favorite movies, and it was great sitting down and watching again on Groundhog Day. You know, I've seen it so many times that it almost feels like, you know, as I'm watching it, I'm like, did I watch this already?
Sonny and Cher stunk sticks in your head.
That's right. All right, so that's number two on my list. Nick, you got another one you want to bring to the table?
Number two, when it comes to romantic movies, yeah, I'll put it up there because it struck on many chords because I did enjoy it. I didn't go see it as many times as everybody else did. I saw it maybe twice. Once in the theater and then, you know, outside, you know, twice in the theater and then every once in a while, Titanic. It's a romantic movie. I said, you know, I enjoyed the performances. I enjoyed the story. I just can't believe I ended that movie angry
you
because.
You left the theater angry?
I left the theater angry because, and this speaks more about my character than anybody else. I'm not indicting anybody here. That old lady was brought onto that ship. Because she had information about the diamond.
Which she had on her person.
Oh, my God. And the fact that all that they were looking for was any information on the diamond. You made them listen to your sob story, which you killed Jack. We'll get into that later. I'll open the pull the pin on that grenade.
Hey, spoiler
and
alert.
Then you,
I haven't seen this.
You then threw the the damn diamond off the thing. Oh.
I want to see your edit of Titanic where... They bring her on board the ship. They go, do you have any information about the diamond? She says, yeah, here it is. End credits. She says, yeah, this is it right here.
And then, you know what she said? But I have a story about this diamond. You know what? I will listen to you. Is this authentic? Yeah.
It's been 84 years.
No, but it's a good story. You know how, you know, Jack and his friend made it on there by winning the tickets, you know, with the luck. You know, it had all the number of people that did on the King of the World stuff. I remember you were there at the time. You're watching, you're like, oh, if I could just push you off the ship. How many people were trying to do that? I said, why would you do it? Oh, my girlfriend wanted me to do it. Did she? Yeah, leave her.
Well, James Cameron, the director, got some flack for using that exact line when he accepted his Oscar. And I thought it was fine. I thought it was okay, but apparently he got some flack. But Titanic is number four on my list. 1997, Leo DiCaprio, Kate Winslet. I remember seeing it opening weekend, might have been opening night, sitting next to a buddy of mine, and as the credits rolled, I turned to my buddy and said, that was one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. Not so much because of the romance aspect, but because of the disaster flick aspect, that the depiction of the sinking of the Titanic was one of the greatest marvels I've ever seen in film. What's interesting about Titanic is how Rose and Jack are fictional characters that come in contact with historic characters,
yeah.
but the role that they play, other than telling the Romeo and Juliet story all over again, is that those two characters allow us, the viewer, to explore that ship from the coal bunkers to first class and the bow of the ship to the stern of the ship. Their role was to allow us to explore that ship. And I know, you know, a lot of people say it's overrated, blah, 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 blah. But when I saw it opening weekend, I thought it was one of the greatest movies I've ever seen.
I did have a 2A. Like, Titanic barely nudged out Roman Holiday.
Ooh.
For me, with Gregory Peck and...
Now, I have seen that. I forgot about that movie.
Yeah. That is...
Oh, my goodness.
Audrey Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn. Gregory Peck.
So... Yeah. The girl that I saw Lost in Translation with, after we started dating, she made me watch that, and I'm like, yeah. this is a great movie.
Tell me more. What line is that from? Oh, my goodness.
Does he have a car?
Greece, yeah.
This is the second movie that you've mentioned that's on my all-time greatest classics list. I don't know if people are aware of the fact that
Great minds, Joe.
Yeah. Audrey Hepburn, it was her first major... a film role, and she won an Oscar for it right off the bat.
Wow.
She won an Oscar for that role, and I absolutely love that movie. When I entered my classic film phase, and when I joined the Netflix DVD program, I got Roman Holiday and was surprised at how moved I was watching this and that moment. Spoiler alert: when she returns to her role, her duties as a princess or whatever, and she sees Gregory Peck, the reporter, standing there, and she has to keep everything in control, in check, and can't reveal what they had shared. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it.
That movie spoke to me because, you know, we talk about our personal experiences. For me, that's ship's passing in the night.
Yeah. And it's almost in a way like Lost in Translation. I can't imagine those two characters consummated their relationship, but they came in contact with each other, learned from each other, grew as a result, and more than likely will never see each other again.
He saw her when she was able to metaphorically and literally let her hair down.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I get so jealous. I'm on some Facebook groups where people visit filming locations. And that big concrete face where he sticks his hand in the mouth and pulls back a nub, that exists. That's real. That's in Rome. And I would give anything to visit that location. That would be, to me, that's iconic.
I could not find it. I tried looking for it when I was traveling during my travels, but I was also backpacking around the time and I was hanging out with a couple of Brazilians and Australians. And it was more for drinking at the time. So there was like, when you hang. They can drink, the Australians.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I see these people visit, you know, these film locations, but they'll stand in front of the Colosseum and go, this was in a movie. And it's like, it's the freaking Colosseum. It's not a movie location. Come on.
I saw a clip where someone says, when it comes to the National Treasure, when they talk about the Constitution and they talk about
Liberty Bell.
I know that because I saw National Treasure and I went,
this was a National Treasure.
Yeah, that's why they knew that U.S. historical fact. I went, oh, we are in so much trouble.
It's like that line in Seinfeld where Elaine says to Jerry, it's a shame that all your knowledge of culture comes from Bugs Bunny cartoons. Because he's going overture. And that's kind of how it is with movies. Like a lot of people, they'll see like the Liberty Bell or the Washington Monument and go, oh, I know that from this movie. And it's like, really? I learned about that in history class. Yeah. So, yeah. Wow, that Roman Holiday is a great one, man. If you haven't seen it, listeners, please go out. I wish people can hear this on Valentine's Day and they could watch it with their loved one tonight because that would be a great film to watch tonight. Yeah, I gave Joey, my coworker, my list of films. I said, go home to the wife and pop in one of these movies, man. It's great.
I had a friend
light some candles.
I had a friend who might have misread the list one time. I say we did a talk about your top romantic movies. He comes in, I said, yeah. He's like, Sophie's Choice, Schindler's List, Terms of Endearment. I'm like, all right. I think you got the wrong list, man. He goes, what are we talking about? We're talking about romance movies. Yeah.
Now, you know what? That brings up a good point that I was thinking of earlier as I was looking at lists of movies, that there are movies that contain a romantic element, but you can't call them a rom-com or a romantic film. like, let's take Forrest Gump. There's that romance thing. I don't know if you call it a romance, but there is a love between Jenny and Forrest.
Well, Forrest, for certain. Jenny, not until she's basically done everything in her life, and then comes back to maybe kill him.
Right. Now, can you call that movie a romantic film or a rom-com? I don't think so.
I can't.
So just because a movie contains a romantic element doesn't necessarily make it a romantic film.
Heartfelt movie, for sure.
Because the central story isn't on the relationship.
Exactly.
It's on Forrest's life, his whole life.
Yeah, and how they just keep crossing paths. Yeah. Yep. Andrew, you got another title you want to bring to the table?
I have another one. This movie wasn't very big. Came out in 2000. Have you heard of Return to Me?
Yeah, that was David Duchovny,
right? Yeah. Written and directed by Bonnie Hunt.
Minnie Driver was in it, right?
Minnie Driver. Carol O'Connor in his last film.
Ah.
Robert Loggia, David Alan Grier, Jolie Richardson, and Jim Belushi.
I saw that movie in a theater, and I haven't thought about it until you just now mentioned it.
In 2000. So I watched it as a 16 or 17-year-old because my mom wanted to rent it, so we rented it, and my parents liked it. My dad, he was initially like, oh, is this just going to be another, rom-com? But it's actually, a decent film, and...
Yeah. It has a very minor fantasy element to it. Are you familiar with the movie?
No, this one I have not seen.
Okay.
Give him the premise.
Okay.
It's pretty fascinating.
So at the beginning of the movie, David Duchovny's wife, is it Jolie Richardson?
I don't remember who his wife.
Anyway, his wife dies in a car accident, but she is on a donor list to give her heart.
Sure.
Minnie Driver has a heart problem, and she receives that heart.
Sure, sure.
And I don't remember exactly how they cross paths, but there's that like you said, a fantasy element where
the heart sort of retained something.
The essence of his own.
And she kind of
is drawn towards him.
Yeah, yeah. It's
right.
Pretty interesting concept.
Yeah, and so that was it came out in 2000. I was 16 or 17 when we rented it. Watched it, and Jim Belushi's funny. There are several other parts that are really funny, which puts it directly into rom-com.
Right.
Territory.
And Minnie Driver, she's so, her character, she's so sweet and so adorable. And Dave Duchovny's, just a hunk, and he plays so good in everything he does.
That was the height of his Mulder status too.
Yeah.
It was around that time he did the movie Evolution. You ever see Evolution?
Oh, one of the underrated comedies I've ever. If you even haven't seen,
it really is. It's like a meteor or something crashes to Earth, and there's this life form in it that quickly evolves.
Him and Orlando Jones are priceless.
It's pretty good. So, I'm really glad you brought this movie up. I may have to revisit it.
I will have to put that in there.
Return to Me. And I wouldn't say there's really, I haven't watched it in years, but there's not really, there might be a couple corny parts, but from what I remember, it was good and it held up. And I told my mom that I was doing this podcast, this podcast for Valentine's Day. She's like, oh, you should mention Return to Me. And I'm like, I haven't thought about that movie in years, but no, that was legitimately
very nice.
A good movie.
Yeah.
So,
you know what you got me thinking of? Think about how many movies that came out in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s that used song titles for the movie title and then would use that track throughout the film, Some Kind of Wonderful, Stand By Me, all these movies. There's one you mentioned earlier, and I was going to mention it, and I forget what it is now, but that was kind of a trend in the 80s and 90s where they would use song titles for the title of the film, and it worked
because
there was that familiar factor.
I'm gonna use the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon to kind of link two other rom-coms, or romantic movies at least, but with Minnie Driver, I think of Gross Point Blank. with John Cusack and her, because it has a good Michigan locale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then with John Cusack, I can also think of Serendipity with, You guys ever seen that movie?
I have not.
Kate Beckinsale.
It's one of those.
And it has Jeremy Piven in it. It's not something that would just jump out at you, but it's almost like One Fine Day. It's kind of flies underneath the radar. If you get a chance to see it, it's an interesting movie. It's all about letting the universe. This one guy is about to get married, or he's single at the time, and he meets Kate Beckinsale, and they have this incredible moment. They're two strangers. They say, "Let's leave it up to fate." He's like, "Wait, I don't even have your number. Can I even get a name?" He's like, "I'm going to write it on. Right on this napkin, and you take my glove. We're both going to get in this building with the high-rise building. We'll get into each opposite elevators. If we push the button and it opens up, we're meant to be together." And they did push the right button.
Yeah.
Only problem is, in John Cusack's elevator, some other bratish kid pushed another button. And so when she gets off at the floor, he doesn't. And then the door closes, he gets off. He's like, "Huh?" And when they go down, and then it's all about little fate intervening, and he's supposed to get married, and he says, "I found the book with her name in it. It's a sign." And so it's interesting. It's what it kind of talks about, like Minnie Driver, the essence of the heart, the stuff you can't count.
You mentioned John Cusack. When you think about the face of rom-coms in the 80s, he was a big one. He was in so many 80s movies of trying to get the girl. And, there's that classic scene where he holds the boombox over his head to win the girl. And, he was sort of the poster boy for rom-coms back in the 80s. And then
Andrew,
Tom Hanks,
I feel like your brain went through like a Rolodex of stuff. Like
trying to come up with the title of it.
I was trying to remember.
He did so many. Say Anything
say anything.
One. Yeah. And then there was the other one with the him and the girl are like working on a Camaro together, and he's pursuing somebody else, not realizing that this girl is right under her nose. What was that one? I may have to look that one up. But yeah, he had a string of hits in the 80s. Yeah, I'm going to jump ahead on my next movie. You brought up Titanic, which was on my list. I'm going to jump ahead to another sort of unconventional rom-com, only because the ending wasn't the classic "and they lived happily ever after" ending that Hollywood usually gravitates toward. I'm going to bring up La La Land, 2016, okay. Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling, directed by Damien Chazelle. One of my all-time recent favorite movies. It's on my 100 favorite movie list. Musical, which I don't know about you guys, I really love a good musical. And up until a certain point, it's kind of a traditional romantic movie because they meet each other and fall in love with each other and begin this relationship. But then things start to unravel a little bit later. Now, what the trend that Hollywood does with a lot of these movies is there's three acts. There's, meeting each other and falling in love and everything's happy and nice. And then the middle act in like 90% of movies is the dark act, where there's conflict. There's fighting, there's bickering, and you think, oh, are they going to survive this? Are they going to get through this? And then there's the third act, which is happily ever after. And I remember just being gut punched when the third act arrives, and you think you're fooled into thinking they got together. And then there's a big reveal where you're like, that's not Ryan Gosling. And I sobbed. Man, I was sitting in that theater sobbing, and I remember like taking people back to the theater with me going, you got to watch this movie, and waiting for that moment when they're sitting next to me, like watching them lose it and start sobbing. And that is probably why I love this movie so much, is the ending was so unconventional that, again, like these movies, we got a theme here, Lost in Translation, Roman Holiday, that these two people came in each other's lives, touched each other, changed each other, and then went their separate ways, probably to never see each other again, except for that little run-in in Seb's nightclub there. But I love movies that deviate from the conventional.
Right.
It has the same, typical Hollywood movie structure, but Damien Chazelle, who I believe wrote this too, just everyone expected it to go left, and it went right. And that decision to do that made this one of my all-time favorite movies. What are your thoughts on La La Land?
No, I was shocked at the end when I saw that, too. But I went, you know what? I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
I didn't saw it, but again, that speaks more to my jaded ass. But I did say, you know what? Kudos to you. I'm glad that was unexpected. I'm glad.
It was very real and authentic. Yeah. Like, it felt like real life. Like, real life doesn't often end happily ever after.
It didn't come out of nowhere. Which they didn't do it just for shock value's sake. Yeah. You could see the elements in the story where you go, like, oh, I can see why they're not together.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But they came together for a reason and then went their separate ways.
Because you get some of the more formulaic ones, and I'm not dissing these movies, but you think Never Been Kissed. This is when Drew Barrymore was in her phase, you know, Never Been Kissed, 50 First Dates, which is also kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and then Wedding Singer.
Yeah. You know what? I meant to have that on my list today. It's not on my 100 favorite movie list, but it would be an honorable mention. But of Adam Sandler's movies, that's my favorite Adam Sandler movie. Is a Wedding Singer with Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, and then you have Forgetting Sarah Marshall. You get these, there's Hitch, which I think when it came out, I thought was hilarious. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, and, you know, but they all have their formula. Yeah, the dark act where everything's going to go to hell and then we'll look back. I want to ask you guys a question. Do you guys consider Gone with the Wind a romantic movie?
Not necessarily. Again, it's an epic, you know, historical drama that contains elements of romance.
Okay.
But again, like La La Land, when you think, oh, these two are going to get together and be happily ever after, and then Clark Gable delivers that line, yeah. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. And you're like, oh, snap. So, yeah, it's not a conventional romantic film. It does have those elements, but it's much bigger than that.
Because along the same lines, I'd ask you, then, like, Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Big, epic movie, but it's supposed to be a love story, but, you know, like, yeah, it kind of gets lost in the in the whole epic stuff, and then, you know, almost bankrupt.
And she kind of had designs on a couple of fellas.
Yeah.
She? Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Andrew, please tell me you've seen La La Land. Oh, my God, he's shaking his head.
I would love to see it. I've heard nothing but great things about it, and I know it's got great accolades.
Here's the problem, Andrew. I would love to be invited to the Victoria's Secret fashion show, but I feel like mine has more of a realistic chance of happening than you watching these movies. Because I would like to watch these movies, yeah, and I would like to go to the Victoria's Secret. Come on, man.
La La Land.
There are only so many hours in a day, gentlemen.
It's winter. When it snows, get a movie and watch it.
I will say, Andrew is a busy man. He's always working on something. Yes. So I will get, there is a slim caveat that that can be offered, but it is that credit card is going to get expired pretty soon. It's like over the limit.
La La Land had such an impact on me that when I do go to LA, I've checked off probably about 10 locations that I visited. When I toured Warner Brothers and the tour guide was like, all right, anyone in the group, is there anything you want to see? And I was like, La La Land. And so they took us to some of the, cause she, remember her character worked on the Warner Brothers lot,
right.
So I was able to see the little cafe that she worked at, and she points up, and here's a little connection. She points up to the Casablanca window. Do you remember that? And so the tour guide was like, there's the Casablanca window. So supposedly that window is where, when they do flashback scenes, where Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman are sitting at a window. All of Casablanca was filmed on the Warner Brothers lot, which is even more remarkable. Because it has that feel that it was filmed in Europe overseas. Yeah. But, yeah, it was all on the Warner Brothers lot. So La La Land just really spoke to me and had a huge impact on my life.
If possible, I would like to nominate an eviction from the romantic, and that's Grease. I said it. It had to be said. I know people are fans of musicals. I would like to eject Grease from the, only because of how it's ruined my life and my sanity.
Oh, we got to get into this. Now, I thought about, Grease is in my top 20 all-time favorite films, and I thought about including this, but like I said, is it a romantic movie or is it, you know, a comedy musical that has romantic elements? So I left it off the list. Now you got me intrigued. What impact did Grease have on a young Nick?
Well, because it's a musical, and at the time, the people I was hanging around with, that seemed to be the only, it seems like they all discovered Grease at the same time, so they kept singing the songs, Joe, over and over and over. And for some of them, I said, are you listening to some of these songs? You know, this is before the whole progressive thing. Tell me more. Did she put up a fight? I mean, also, let me get this straight. You blame my Christmas songs. It's cold, baby. It's cold outside, but that's okay. You know what? And then the car flies at the end. Where is that coming from?
Fantasy element. You want to, you know, talking about the lyrics to a song, you're going to laugh when I tell you this. So working in video production, occasionally we record dance recitals. Now, I got to go back years ago in my career where we were asked to come and shoot this dance recital with little kids. We did multi-camera. I'm working one of the cameras. And these kids come out like in black leather jackets and poodle skirts. Now, we're talking 5, 6, 7, you know, age. And Grease Lightning starts playing. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. I hope they edited this song. They did not. And imagine seeing 5, 6, 7-year-olds dancing to, you know, we ain't bragging, it's a real wagon. And I'm like, no, that messed me up.
I ranked that right up there with when people finally discovered what skeet, skeet, skeet meant in the Yin Yang Twins. Like, ah, skeet, skeet, skeet. I'm like, you know what they're talking about, right? Because you guys are all singing along to it. Okay, all right, that's fine. Maybe do some research then.
Grease is one of those movies. When I saw it, I was about 12 or so when it came out. And as a kid, you see one version of it. And then you get older, you go, oh, that's what they're talking about. Like, I did not know this, I swear, until I was much older. In Grease Lightning, there's a scene where they're in the fantasy element, and John Travolta has a saran wrap, and he rubs it on his crotch or whatever, and then he, like, throws it aside. I didn't get the reference as a kid. Apparently, in the 50s, saran wrap was used as a condom.
Yeah, that was...
And
yeah,
I was
That and a rubber band.
Grease is another one. I visited multiple locations. As a matter of fact, my sister, who's a big Grease fan... she came to L.A. with me a couple years ago, and I said, I'm taking you to a surprise location. I'm not telling you where it is. So we pull up in front of this high school, and she immediately said, is this right, El High? And I said, yes, it is. It's in real life, it's Venice High School, but there are these areas where, you know, when we first see Danny, he's got this girl up against the wall, and you hear that music, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, when he turns to the camera. All of that was right there, and then I said, follow me. I showed her where Summer Loving played out, where the girls danced over here, and then we went over to the football field, and we saw where the bleachers, where the guys were doing their thing while the girls were over here. It was really cool to see those locations in person. And I remember going to a beach called the Leo Carrillo State Beach in Malibu, and I remember standing there going, this all looks very familiar, but I couldn't place it. So I pulled up my phone and I Googled Leo Carrillo State Beach and listed dozens and dozens of films that had filmed there. But one of them was Grease, the beginning of Grease, when they go, is this the end? No, Sandy, it's just the beginning. So, yeah.
No, I mean, the great individual performance, but it's one of those things where the songs kept, while it's memorable, and then the subtext to those songs, because of the environment kind of ruined the... Like took away. It's just like what almost happened with Titanic when they kept playing Celine Dion's song over over. I was like,
yes, so
guys,
huge.
Come on.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I can listen to Grease songs over and over and over. All right, I'm gonna throw out a couple of honorable mentions here. They are not on my top 100 list, but just outside the top 100. I played a little clip earlier, When Harry Met Sally, 1989, Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan, another Rob Reiner film, like The Princess Bride. Again, I love the movie because it's more about friendship than romance. And every time it seemed like one of them said, okay, I'm ready to date the other was in a different relationship. And the timing was never right until the big reveal at the end, the New Year's party, and a great ending. And I wish I had the line here queued up, but he says something, when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with someone, you want to start as soon as possible. And that is such a great line.
And I love that they
line.
Had those, they interspiced with couples giving interviews. Basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, and that was a little charming aspect I enjoyed about that movie.
Yeah. Now, another one that is kind of controversial when I throw this title out. And let me set this up by saying I was living in California in 1990. My cousin and my aunt wanted to go see a movie. They invited me along. I just went along, didn't even care what the movie was. And that movie turned out to be Pretty Woman. And I just didn't know anything about it. I was like, whatever. And, man, I came out of that theater a changed person. It was my first exposure to a vibrant Julia Roberts at her peak. And I liked that movie far more than I thought I was going to like it. But when you really look at it, kind of like analyzing the lyrics to Grease, the hooker with a heart of gold story. And it's so there's some controversy there that you're almost Disneyfying this sordid storyline. But I think it's Julia Roberts. You cast anybody else in that role, I don't know if it's the success that it is, but Julia Roberts was just at her peak when Pretty Woman came out.
Like, you imagine if you try to put Meg Ryan in that role, that may not have worked.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
At the time. It probably wouldn't have worked out that well.
Yeah, yeah. So that's on my honorable mentions. And then a movie that we talked on our Oscar episode that we talked about, Shakespeare in Love, 1998. Yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow, Joseph Fiennes, directed by John Madden, not the football John Madden. But again, we had a conversation about how people were really angry that it beat Saving Private Ryan for Best Picture. And in my opinion, even though I don't think it should have beat Saving Private Ryan, it's a damn good movie. And, God, I feel like going home and putting the DVD in when we're done here. It's a great, great movie. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. And if you haven't, I challenge you to look this up. When Shakespeare in Love came out, which basically tells the story of a young William Shakespeare who experiences some things in his real life that motivates him to write Romeo and Juliet. When this movie came out and the whole Oscar thing came out, someone did a parody of it called George Lucas in Love. And he's on a college campus. He, dates a woman that has these hair buns. He has a big hairy friend. If you haven't seen it, look up George Lucas in Love. It's one of my favorite fan parodies of all time.
I will do that. Now I'm intrigued by that.
So those are my honorable mentions. You guys got any honorable mentions you want to throw out?
Yeah, there's, with Julia Roberts, there's My Best Friend's Wedding. That
never saw it.
That's, wow, okay, there's, yeah. So that would be one up there.
You know what's funny? I remember going to the theater with my two sisters and my nephew, who was pretty little at the time, 3 or 4 years old. My sisters went to go see My Best Friend's Wedding. I went to go see Iron Giant. And I took my nephew to see Iron Giant. So
that's the ending of Iron Giant. Jeez. then there's Runaway Bride. She had done that one. And
she had a string of hits.
Notting Hill.
Yeah, I was going to say Notting Hill. Hugh Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then she went into her breakout roles, Aaron Brockovich, that she won the Oscar for. So, yeah.
I loved her in The Pelican Brief. That was early on with her and Denzel. I said, So there, all these Oscar actors had their
roots
whether it's romantic movies or rom-coms.
Yeah.
And said, okay, I can't get stuck here. You have to find me roles outside of this that are challenging.
Yeah, look at in the 2000s, McConaughey. He did a lot of things. And then after he took a little bit of time off and then came back with, Lincoln Lawyer. And since then,
his starting role, though, I would argue, because he started off with A Time to Kill. That was his first movie.
Yes.
When you start off with, that's a pretty dramatic charge.
And also
movie.
the slacker 70s movie,
Was it Dazed and Confused?
Dazed and Confused.
All right.
Slacker 70s movie.
It came out later, but it's set in the 80s, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But
in the 80s.
He delivers a line that can be perceived as creepy now. He says, that's what I love about high school girls. Yeah. I keep getting older, but they stay the same age. It's like,
yeah. You're like, oh, hey.
But that also a great movie.
Yeah.
Like that. Science fantasy movie in the 70s, Star Something. You sugar daddy.
I couldn't remember the name.
Andrew, any honorable mentions you want to throw out?
Yeah, I did mention this on the group text. It's called About Time.
Yep, with Rachel McAdams.
Yep,
The Notebook.
Domhnall Gleeson.
Yep.
He played General Hux in the later Star Wars movie, the redhead. Excellent actor. Also, his dad is
Bill Nye.
Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah. Nye. Tom Hollander. And the first time ever I saw on screen, a young Margot Robbie.
Wow.
Okay.
Tell me, I've never even heard about this movie. What's the premise?
So, Domhnall Gleeson's character finds out through his father that the men in their lineage, they can go back in time. Is it just going back in time?
Yeah, they can time jump, yeah.
Or can they go in the future? I don't remember.
My understanding was that they could time jump to significant moments.
Okay. Yeah, so he meets and starts to fall in love with Rachel McAdams. It takes place in England, in like a beach town. It's not in London. And she's an American there for whatever reason. And he falls in love, like they start falling in love. And then his dad tells him, you know, gives him this talk, like, you know, we have this power. Ooh. So there's a little bit of...
And use it wisely because...
Yeah, use it wisely. But there's a little bit of light sci-fi to it.
I mean, there's a philosophical talk to it. If you had the love of your life and it ended, would you go and you try to go back and relive it? What if you go back and say, oh, the decisions that I didn't do to try and make it a better life, but you end up screwing it up?
Yeah.
Because time is unpredictable.
So it has a Groundhog's Day vibe to it a little bit. But he goes back. I think they get intimate, and it's his first time. And of course, it's not great. But then he's like, okay, maybe if I keep going back and back and doing the same thing, it gets better and better. And so they just, the relationship grows.
Yeah.
But then.
No, you're dumb.
Okay. It turns out the dad tells him that he's dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a. The movie is. I think as much about as the father-son relationship as it is about the romantic relationship. Mm. And just to sum it up, it is an excellent, excellent,
never heard of it.
Well-made movie. I saw it, came out in November of 2013. I saw it with my fiance at the time and her Russian roommate. We saw it in the theater and... The end of the movie, I'm not going to say exactly what happens, but...
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so don't spoil it.
And it's definitely worth watching. But I legit was fighting back tears at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I can see why. Yeah.
And once we got out of the movie, my fiance, she was kind of looking at me. She could tell my eyes were all red. And she's like, Andrew, you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. I just have really bad allergies. Like, I couldn't admit it, but like.
It's January.
Yeah. But that movie, like, it moved me.
And we'll have to revisit this. I want to do a episode down the road of the tearjerkers.
Yeah.
Because I see this on social media all the time. What are movies that made you cry? And I could rattle off a dozen movies.
I could too. But I won't spend much time on it. But. Excellent, and I would normally say it was an indie movie, but it was distributed by Universal.
It definitely was.
And
an indie movie.
It had a budget of $12 million, made $88 million. So, but it didn't have like wide.
Now I'm curious. When did The Time Traveler's Wife come out?
I don't know.
Because that'd be interesting. Because sometimes Hollywood does this copycat thing.
Yeah, well, as you were talking about the movie and you mentioned the time travel element, you immediately made me think of Time After Time, I think it's called. Yeah. Or no, Somewhere in Time.
So, yeah.
Somewhere in Time. Christopher Reeve and the actress, I'm drawing a blank.
It was filmed up at Mackinac.
Mackinac Island, Grand Hotel. And I remember seeing it when I was younger and liking it, but I had a hard time. Jane Seymour is the actress.
Oh, yeah.
I had a hard time with the premise that Christopher Reeve's character was basically to take a nap and will himself back in time. And I'm like, all right, if you can get past the premise, all right. But I had a hard time getting past the premise that you can will yourself back in time. But a lot of people cite that movie as one of their favorite romantic movies.
At least
of all
make
time.
It a hot tub.
And people travel too. People caught me off guard.
And don't do a sequel because it'll get a 12% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Hot Tub Time Machine is actually very, very funny.
The first one is.
But that movie, Somewhere in Time, brings people to Mackinac Island, and they want to visit the Grand Hotel. I've only been there once. I covered the Midwest Governor's Convention at the Grand Hotel. I partied in Governor Blanchard's mansion.
Nice.
It was really cool to see that. But that's a big touristy place because of that movie.
I
don't know because of it, but a lot of people go there because of the movie.
I haven't seen it, but I remember a couple years ago my mom mentioned that because she loved Christopher Reeves. Every woman love Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, and 80s. I guess they have like annual things where some of the actors will show up at Mackinac Island, and there's markers that say this is where this scene was filmed and this is where that was filmed. So,
cool.
Yeah, that's a big romantic one. As we kind of get down to our last few minutes here, I want to throw out a couple more classics that Nick shockingly didn't throw out. Come on, Nick. It Happened One Night. Anything? Got anything? Happened One Night, 1934. Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert won 5 Oscars in every major category. Come on, fellas.
Was that the one where there's the drape hanging in between?
Okay. The Wall of Jericho.
Yeah. They had to imply certain things back then because they couldn't do it. Yeah, okay, no, when you say it, now it's coming back to me.
Undershirt sales plummeted when Clark Gable unbuttoned his shirt to reveal he was not wearing undershirts. And people said, if Clark Gable's not wearing an undershirt, I'm not going to wear an undershirt.
Rational
Clark thinking. Gable's character, in a way, led to Bugs Bunny. There's a scene where he's munching on a carrot, and he's kind of a wiseacre. Bugs Bunny sort of emulated Clark Gable.
I had never made that association.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, when you watch the movie, you'll see it. As soon as you see it, you go, there it is.
Wow.
Claudette Colbert, she has a very famous scene when they're hitchhiking, and he's up there with his thumb, you know, and cars are driving by, and he thumbs his nose at the car. She goes, let me take a shot at it. Yeah, and he's like, what are you going to do? And she hikes her skirt up, and the cars are like,
and that's in every book. Looney Tunes stuff going forward. There's that thing, the old lady's leg with the...
That's right.
Yeah.
Great, great movie. My buddy Dennis, that's his all-time favorite movie. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, Andrew, add it to your list. It Happened One Night.
All right.
Another one I want to throw out, Sullivan's Travels. Does that ring a bell?
No, that one does not.
You would really love this. So this pampered and kind of, I don't want to say spoiled, but a Hollywood filmmaker, director, he's tired of the garbage that he's been putting out, and he says, I want to make a film about the great American experience. So he announces to the press that he's going to go undercover as an average American male and explore the world and get away from my luxury and, you know, all that. And so when he goes out into the world, he gets mugged and beaten and has his identity stolen, and nobody believes who he is. And as he's out there trying to figure this out, he runs into a lovely Veronica Lake, famous blonde peekaboo hairstyle, and they kind of tag along together, and he brings her out to Hollywood when he makes it back. But a great, great film.
Adding it to the list.
Yeah. A movie that I watch every year around the holidays, The Shop Around the Corner, 1940, Jimmy Stewart, Margaret Sullivan. This movie inspired You've Got Mail with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. The premise is, in this movie, that there are two people who are pen pals, and they share letters with each other without knowing each other's identity. And the letters are very poetic and flowery and loving, and they're kind of developing this relationship. Well, Jimmy Stewart works at this shop that hires this girl who pretty much despises him for whatever reason, not knowing that they're corresponding with each other. So they're in love with each other when they write to each other, but right. when they show up at work, they hate each other's guts. And it's a comedy, but there's some dark moments in it. But when Christmas rolls around, it has some Christmas elements to it. Check it out. Great, great movie.
You know, when you mentioned the letter thing, it sparked my thing about Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, where they put each other, they live in the same house. But they put the letters.
That's a time travel sort of a piece, isn't it? Yeah.
The letters in the mailbox.
Is it the lake house?
It might have been something like that. Yeah.
And the last classic I want to throw out, this one inspired another Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movie, Sleepless in Seattle. This is An Affair to Remember, 1957, okay. Cary Grant, Deborah Kerr. The basic premise of this is kind of like the Serendipity, was that the movie you were talking about? It's, in a way, it's similar to that where they kind of fall in love, even though for some reason they can't be together. And they said, if you're free and I'm free 1 year from today, let's meet at the top of the Empire State Building. Classic premise. So as they're making their way to the Empire State Building, she gets hit by a car and is hospitalized. And he goes to the Empire State Building and says, well, I guess it's not going to happen. But fate sees otherwise and brings them together. So those are some great, great classics that I recommend. Any final titles you want to throw out as we wrap things up?
We were talking about this, Out of Sight, George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez. You know, they may not call that a romance movie, but the chemistry between them was fantastic. And another one that came to mind, I'm a George Clooney warpath here, but Up in the Air. That were you talking about gut punches at the very end. Have you seen Up in the Air?
I haven't seen it. Was that filmed in Detroit?
Yes.
The airport?
When you get a chance, there is a gut punch similar to, not to the impact of La La Land, but it's in the ballpark.
Interesting.
When you get a chance, where it's this character who says, I'm more comfortable traveling, always being a nomad. And that's his person until he goes through this change where he kind of sees the value of a relationship of having roots.
Yeah.
And then comes the kick at the end. So when you get a chance, check it out. It's very interesting.
I'm a loner, Dottie, a rebel.
Andrew, any final titles you want to throw out?
Maybe Pee-wee's Big Adventure with Pee-wee and Dottie. I mean, at the end, he finally gets her. She comes to his film premiere. like we said, the genre. It's sometimes kind of hard to pick. I don't really have many up there right now off the top of my head. But
I'll tell you one thing. A couple movies just came to mind where you were talking about romance and it's the relationship. Birdcage with Robin Williams.
Yeah,
and,
I saw that
Nathan Lane.
Yeah,
Nathan Lane. I really enjoyed that. And that was really funny.
I only saw it once and it was only in theater, but Brokeback Mountain. Mm-hmm. Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger, when their relationship, like, I believe it. I'm like, oh, wow, okay.
Okay.
That was some powerful stuff in there. I was like, I get it. Okay.
Mm. All right. I wanted to do this with just a couple minutes remaining, but I wanted to throw something out real quick before we wrap things up. Carl Weathers, just lost him recently. Mm-hmm. Iconic actor, versatile. Yeah. When I was a kid, obviously, I was introduced to him in the Rocky films. Then he showed up in Predator. It was great in Predator. One of the great handshakes of all time.
That was the first time I saw him. Yep.
Yeah, and then he showed his versatility when he showed up in Happy Gilmore.
Yep.
And then, to my pleasant surprise, he showed up in The Mandalorian. Absolutely. As Greef Karga.
And directed a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Too, yeah.
And so he was at the Motor City Comic Con a year ago in May, and it was cool to see him in person.
Nice. Did they ever say what happened? Because
I don't know if autopsy has been revealed or not.
Yeah,
but,
I haven't heard.
Heartbreaking loss. Yeah. We talked about gut punches. That was one I did not see coming. Mm. As a matter of fact, watching the Super Bowl, he appeared in the Rob Gronkowski kicking thing, which I'm like, wow, when they filmed that, they did not realize that when this aired, it was going to be very, very sad. And they did a nice little tribute to him during the Super Bowl. But one of the greats, I've been reading about him, people paying tribute. They said he had a wicked, wicked sense of humor. And he was...
And a genuinely nice guy.
Yeah, that's what I hear. And he was invited to be, I want to say, on a comedy series, I think. And he responded by saying, I'm interested in doing it, but he's like, we're not just going to do, like, tough guy Rocky jokes or anything, are we? And they were like, now that you mentioned it, no. And he goes, what do you got in mind? And he said, how about if you make my character like a cheapskate or something? And they were like, ooh, we like it. So, like, he was like, I want to break away from the action hero. I want to play up the comedy aspect. And he would contribute to the script. And so everyone he worked with loved him. Sylvester Stallone paid a very moving tribute to him, and just a huge, huge loss to lose Carl Weathers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, when that in memoriam comes at the end of the 2024, geez.
Yeah, at the Oscar ceremony. Yeah. I hope they have enough time to include him in.
Well, that's for 2023, right? The in memoriam.
Yeah, but sometimes if someone passes away just before the Oscars, they try to squeeze him in there. So I'm hoping they do a nice little tribute. So.
Yeah, you could do it twice.
Yeah,
it's worth it.
Yeah. All right, guys, that was a great one.
Yes, it was.
You still have a few hours left to celebrate Valentine's Day. And
light those candles.
You got that
and the chocolate.
Song.
Put on that's some Marvin Gaye.
All right. I'm going to go home and watch a documentary on the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And
uplifting, Joe.
That's how I celebrate
right there with my buddy.
Day every year.
Sophie's Choice and Schindler's List.
I posted today that St. Valentine was bludgeoned and beheaded, and I'm like, that's a fitting tribute to my Valentine's Day. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Guys, thank you for joining me again, and we'll leave you with our little ditty. Come to the movies.
Come to the movies. Watch Charlie Chaplin. And put some sunshine into your day. Forget the hard times. Come to the movies and try to laugh your troubles away.